Thank you. It is 26 minutes to nine. There is no question that China abuses the human rights of millions of its citizens. Its system of government is based on repression and detention of critics of the Communist Party. But in Xinjiang province, is the repression much worse? Does it count as genocide? Beijing has confirmed the number of Uyghur and other Turkic Muslims detained in Xinjiang, revealing that more than a million people, 1.3 million, have gone through what China terms vocational training centres. Others call them concentration camps and point to a range of policies designed, they claim, to wipe out a people, a culture. A series of hearings has just finished in London, aimed at gathering evidence of what has actually been going on in Xinjiang. It's been supported by a pro-Uyghur charity. It has no official backing, but it does have a very experienced chair. That chair is Sir Geoffrey Nice, the human rights barrister, who was the lead prosecutor in the trial of Slobodan Milosevic, and is on the line now. Sir Geoffrey, good morning.
Good morning.
What have you been trying to establish?
We're trying to establish, first, what happened. Second, when we are directed on the law, what, if any, crimes are committed. What happened is in large part, in significant part, as you've outlined in your opening, accepted by the People's Republic of China, that is the creation of the camps. Question is, what's happening in the camps? What is the intention behind what's happening in the camps? You referred to genocide. Is there an intention to affect the population of Uyghurs generally in such a way as to commit genocide?
And you called witnesses and you heard some pretty appalling stuff, didn't you?
Yes, a number of witnesses were called. The evidence of prison conditions for women and men, indescribable. Rape within prison, torture, forced abortions outside prison in order to control birth. Yes, extremely difficult evidence for people to listen to. But it has to be said, evidence that the Uyghur themselves very much wanted to be heard, because they have felt that their suffering has not been adequately recognised.
Was it evidence, though, that reached, in your view, and will it reach, should it reach, in the public view, the level of fact?
Certainly. There's no difficulty in making factual findings. And, of course, we're going to have another hearing in September. Different evidence, some more of the same, and we hope further evidence that will be released as a result of people hearing the first session. But yes, we'll hear more evidence. And facts are easily enough provable, because apart from the evidence of the people who would say that they are victims, you've got aerial imagery of the camps and other expert evidence showing what was actually the intention of the government. The most interesting issue, and the one that has to be resolved, is who made the decisions, how far up the chain of responsibility did the decision-making go? We've already got a lot of evidence to suggest that the decisions about what's happening in Xinjiang can only have been made at the very top. A particular document hasn't emerged, but that won't stop us being able to find out what the decision was.
That's interesting. Does this go to the president? Does this go to Xi Jinping?
A couple of witnesses have certainly suggested or said in terms that the decisions of this kind about a significant portion of the People's Republic of China, an area critical to the Belt and Road Initiative, such decisions must have been made at the very top.
Must have been made, or is there evidence? Will there ever be a paper trail that could go to a court? We were talking earlier on in the programme about Radko Mladic, and you, of course, were involved in the prosecution of Slobodan Milosevic. Are we talking about the kind of evidence that one day, in some sort of circumstances, could actually lead to someone paying a penalty for what has happened to the Uyghurs?
No reason not to allow for that possibility. Paper trails are, of course, enormously valuable. They're not actually essential if the circumstances are themselves sufficient to prove that there must have been a paper trail and there must have been a decision made at a certain level. And the whole structure of the People's Republic of China, with the three-part state, government and party interconnected in the way that it is, generally speaking, can be said to lead to the top for decisions of this kind.
How does your hearing, how do you hope that your hearing might influence the wider international debate about what China is doing, because China is very, very robust, isn't it, in its rejection of all of this. They called your tribunal an anti-China farce. Is it your intention that they're no longer able, with any credibility at all, to manage to persuade people across the world that that's the case?
Our tribunal is not going to overreach. It will provide factual findings that are robust and indeed only reached if we are satisfied beyond reasonable doubt that it's appropriate to do so. Providing facts like that to governments like ours that are extremely reluctant to make adverse findings about China, and also to other governments and to institutions of all kinds, educational, business and so on, that interact with China, providing a nugget, if you will, of undoubted truth should encourage everyone or oblige everyone to act in accordance with their duties. And we all have duties, not just governments. We all have duties in respect to the suffering of our fellow men.
Sir Geoffrey Nice, thank you very much.
It is 20.